2020 has already been something of a 2020 kind of year for Reading Football Club, who have made the most 2020 decision imaginable and sacked their manager on the eve of a new season, installed a new CEO, and hired Quinton Fortune. Welcome to the Tarlaston Podcast, episode 232. I'm delighted to be your host once again, Mark Mayo, for the new season, the 2020-2021 season. There's almost as many 20s in that as there is in a coronavirus band party. We are a show by Reading Football Club fans for fans, and joining me to preview the new season are two of the Tarlaston's finest royal minds. Firstly, as a debut on the show, I believe, Ben Thomas, the man behind The View from the Dolan on the Tarlaston website. How's it going?
Very good, thank you. Glad to be here. It's good to make my debut.
Absolutely. And Ollie Allen, a bit of an old hand now, Ollie, jumps in admirably for the manager sacking podcast, which I guess is becoming as much as an annual event as our Christmas review podcasts.
Very much so, yeah. I think I said last week it was the fifth one, I think, or the fourth one we've done in about 2.5 years, which isn't a great look for the club. But yeah, enjoyed it nonetheless, and looking forward to getting stuck back in this afternoon.
Yeah, one thing to pick up from Ollie on the Tarlaston website at the moment, his interview with a couple of the old club admin Twitter lads who were behind the transfer reveals, the Carabao cans and everything like that. So get on the Tarlaston.com and read Ollie's interviews on there. We've also got, before we jump into the preview, big thanks as ever to our sponsors, ZCZ Films, who are sticking with us for the new season. Obviously, with these mad times, we have to look after our own, and ZCZ are run by Waldemar, who's a big friend of the show, so we're very happy to have him on board and promote ZCZ Films for the next year, and also to our Patreon campaigners as well. We have been, I suppose, in a very unusual pattern of podcast releases over the last few months, as you can imagine, so a massive thanks to everyone who stuck with us on the Patreon campaign, and details of that, if you want to join it, are on the article that will go on the Tarlaston with this podcast. So without further ado, let's get in and preview the 2020-2021 season.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
Okay, so guys, let's do this a little bit differently, because the first question I'm going to ask you is not about Reading, but I quite like to ground this conversation in terms of how good the opposition is going to be this year. A quick discussion on how, generally speaking, much quality is going to be in the Championship this year, because if it's a really, really good year and everyone's really awesome, then we've got a bit of a problem on our hands. But I'm not too sure that's the case, and it's good to know where things lie with that. And Ollie, let's look generally at the quality of the Championship. Do you feel like there are lots of teams this year, both home and away, that Reading are going to face, where we're going to think, oh God, we're in for a really difficult game here?
If I'm honest, not too many. But I don't think that was really, you know, too dissimilar to sort of last season. I think you obviously had Leeds, who ended up running away with the league title. West Brom did very well as well. Brentford had a very good season, but behind those three, perhaps obviously Fulham as well, there weren't too many teams that sort of really sort of stood out. I think it's much the same this season. The teams that have come down look pretty good, especially I think Norwich and Watford. Norwich seem to have recruited really, really well since coming down. Kieran Dowell's a really good addition. Jordan Hugill scores goals in this league for fun, really. And they seem to have sort of built that model that can get them back up. Watford, likewise, still have a very, very good squad of, you know, they've lost obviously Abdoulaye Doucouré yesterday. Jose Holabas as well, I think, has gone as well, but they've still got players the likes of Will Hughes, Chalobah, who are Premier League quality players, really. So, and obviously Brentford as well, I think obviously they've lost Ollie Watkins today, but they seem to have a very, very well-oiled machine down at Brentford that no matter who leaves the club, they always manage to bring in someone better to replace them. I know Ivan Toney's come in from Peterborough, but whether someone else comes through the door as well, and I'd imagine they'll be up there as well. They're probably my three picks for promotion, but behind them, you're looking, Bournemouth obviously have lost quality in Nathan Ake and Callum Wilson, Ryan Fraser, who knows how they'll do without Eddie Howe.
Cardiff, I think, look all right, obviously. They've got some good players. Neil Harris has done very well there. Swansea obviously got to the playoffs last year as well. Forest, I'm sure, will be hurting from their playoff heartbreak last year. But none of those teams really stand out to me as teams that are going to blow the league away. And in terms of teams down the bottom of the league, obviously, the sides coming up don't fill me with particular confidence. Wickham, obviously, you know, a very, very difficult job on their hands to stay up, despite the fantastic work that Gareth Ainsworth has done. Rotherham don't look much better placed. Neither the Coventry, really, who haven't really added that much championship experience. Sheffield Wednesday start on a minus 12 points deduction, which is always hard for every team. It's not a high quality championship for me this season. Whether that means Reading can finish high up, again, I don't know, because I think if people were looking at it from the outside, Reading would also be one of those teams where people think that we might struggle. I actually think we're quite a hard team to predict this season, Reading. But yeah, in answer to your question, going back to the start of it, there's not that many teams really that particularly scare me.
No, that's the thing, isn't it? And because of the coronavirus pandemic, not a massive amount of signings have really gone on. If you look at the number of teams that have changed manager over the summer, Birmingham, Huddersfield and ourselves are the only ones who are the non-relegated teams, basically. Obviously, Bournemouth and Watford as well. And then I think what that means is that you have a situation where teams aren't high on star talent. They're not going to stun you maybe with a sort of 4-0 win or something like that that these players are capable of doing. But what you do get is stability and organisation and perhaps a greater sense of team ethic from teams that have been around each other more with less sort of disruption. I think team, as you mentioned, Cardiff, you've got teams like Blackburn, Middlesbrough might be able to put themselves in that category under Neil Warnock. I think that's a real problem for us, Ben, because we don't have stability in organisation because we've just changed our manager.
I agree with Ollie. I think Norwich look really, really good. My issue with the Championship is that it's very stagnant. So there are a lot of clubs that have been there for a long time that, as you say, have had that stability. I think there's going to be massive question marks over teams like Stoke and Huddersfield to see how they kind of kick on from pretty bad seasons last year. I think, obviously, Borough have got that Warnock factor. But as you say, you know, the biggest thing a lot of these teams have got, even, you know, teams like QPR, the clubs coming up as well from League One, is that they've been able to build. So they've had, you know, good pre-season behind them. They've been able to kind of cherry pick some of the players they brought in. They're fully aware of the kind of the need to do business in certain areas over the next month. And we just don't have that because, you know, Paolo coming in has got to assess the squad quickly and work out what he needs to get in. I think in terms of quality, you know, last year it was very evident that there was the three top teams who, in my opinion, did deserve to go up. I feel like with Brentford, it's going to be interesting to see how they get over that hangover because it was, you know, in footballing standards, quite an almighty collapse, really. And the same with Forest. You know, there was rumours early on in the pre-season where they felt like Lamici might go. He's obviously stayed and he started to build a decent squad again. So I think we're up against it for those mid-table spots. I feel like, you know, as Ollie's alluded to, some of the clubs that are there already, there is some very poor sides in there. You know, Barnsley, Rotherham, the Sheffield United Sheffield Wednesday that we've mentioned already. You know, Luton, Coventry, obviously, and Wickham too. So I think we will have enough to stay up. But it's whether or not that kind of instability over pre-season is really going to scupper us, and whether or not we've kind of been victims of our own downfall already, really. We'll have to wait and see on that one.
Well, that's the question. I suppose the million-dollar question of this podcast is how good are Reading? And let's talk about Veljko Paunovic's team then. And going squad-wise at the moment, let's talk defence to begin with. Then we'll talk about the midfield and attack afterwards. But the goalkeepers, I think we'll all agree, we're absolutely fine with that. Raphael will be number one. Luke Southwood appears to be number two. Sam Walker appears to have dropped off the face of the planet. Unless I've missed him having a lot of starts in pre-season because I've not seen him at all. And then that's goalkeepers. I think that's absolutely fine as it is now. Defence, however, I describe it as average for Championship standard. With Liam Moore, Michael Morrison, you've got a lot of experience, but not a lot of amazingness in there. Tom McIntyre, Tom Holmes, you probably would put them maybe down the other end of the spectrum if you wanted to be kind on their amazingness. Fullbacks, we've only got one left back, and one of our right backs is a Brazilian who's played like 45 minutes in this division. So really, we're looking on, I think in those sort of situations, you really have to rely on the manager being able to get these guys organised, because Ollie, I'm not sure that we have a lot to go on defensively at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a bad starting back four if he's going to go with a back four. I know Mark Byrne went with a back 3/5 in pre-season, but then from what we're reading about Pano, he generally goes with a back four. And that back four of, you know, say, Yeardon, Morrison, Moore, maybe McIntyre every now and again, and then Richards at left back isn't that bad of a starting back four. But in terms of depth, it does certainly worry me, as you say. No backup left back, obviously. Ethan Bristow played there against Colchester and played fairly well. You've got Amari Samuels too, who can play there. Right back, again, as you say, Arunia, again, I thought had a pretty decent game actually against Colchester. Set up Lucas Shaw's first goal, but how much we can really rely on him as a backup to Yeardon, who has had his injury problems last season, certainly. Who knows? I'd like to think he does dip into that transfer market to try and get some more quality in there, especially back up to MR Richards and maybe back up to Andy Yeardon. Centre-backs, I probably think we're right. Obviously, we lost Matt Miazga, who's gone back to Chelsea. Tom McIntyre's decent cover. Tom Holmes, we've not seen for 2 years. So, and how much you can judge him on a spell in the Belgian second tier is obviously hard to tell. So, yeah, I it depends how much money we sort of have to spend or sort of want to spend, because there are other areas of the team that need improving. But certainly for me, that backup, definitely a fullback, has to be a priority.
Yeah, that's the thing. We'll talk more about transfers in a bit, but for where we are at the moment, Ben, if we add that starting two-man centre defence, who do you think actually, presuming Tom Holmes isn't in the top, you know, the top two centre-backs at the club at the moment, do we think that McIntyre is the man who's going to miss out, or do you think Paulo is going to keep him in?
I think from Paulo's point of view, he will probably want to go for that experience to start with. I think, you know, as with any start to the season, you're going to want to get points on the board early to kind of, you know, keep the wolves from the door, as it were. I feel like with McIntyre, he's the long term, and I like the partnership that him and Morrison set up towards the end of last year when things weren't going well. And we had that little period, didn't we, where we didn't concede. And those two were certainly a big part of that. You know, it depends if the rumours are true about Liam Moore, and obviously he moves on to pastures new. But for me, I think it's more a Morrison and then sort of McIntyre just kind of dropping onto the bench, really, and chipping in where he needs to. But, you know, you don't want a situation where McIntyre starts to get frustrated with that, because obviously we've seen that with Osho, where he didn't want to stay because of the lack of potential game time. So the last thing we want to do is lose another player that's potentially a really good star for us moving forward. It's whether or not he does stick with that back four. As Ollie said, I think it just picks itself at the moment. But yeah, I think that first game on Saturday is going to be very telling in terms of the team that he wants to set out before he's able to assess and then bring in new players as and when he needs to.
Yeah, well, Tom McIntyre was unavailable for the Colchester game because he was with the Scotland under-21 team. But that was an interesting team that he picked for Colchester, with a three-man centre midfield of Sonny Aluko, Michael Elise and Josh Lauren, with McNulty and Baldock kind of either side of Lucas Shaw. Now, in terms of the midfield, Sonny Aluko, if it's a comeback, it's a comeback. You've got to keep, if you're marking all the comebacks down in your diary, you might need to turn the page by now for Sonny Aluko. But we have got another example of him having another chance, which is fair enough. If the manager can get the best out of him, we've got a good player. If he can't, he's not the only one. Josh Lauren has come in from Shrewsbury and has been absolutely fine from what I've seen. I went down to the Spurs friendly and he played perfectly well, given the fact that Tottenham are a better football team than Reading. Elise, again, we'll see plenty of Rinomota. Swift and Ajaria, these are known quantities now for Reading. So I think as a midfield basis, I think we're pretty much set. The attack, on the other hand, I don't know. Ollie, what do you think on the strikers? We've got Lucas Schau, keep him fit and he'll score goals. Sorry, that's not a very convincing chant, but that's probably the best way I can put him. And then we just kind of left kind of... It's a bit touchy-feely at the moment, isn't it, with McNulty and Baldock. How much do you really want to invest in putting them in the team? Yaki Mate's around as well. How do you sort of rate the players that are behind Zhao in the pecking order right now?
On paper, there's, I'd say, a fair amount of potential. George Puskas is definitely potential in terms of, you know, what we know he's capable of, but he just needs to produce it far more often than he does. Yaki Mate, I think, doesn't get mentioned enough. I mean, he's been our top goal scorer in the last two seasons. And, you know, you know what you're going to get with Yaki Mate now, and he is a good option to have in there. Whether, you know, whether he plays out wide now, because if Pano is going to play a 4-2-3-1, we've got no wingers, and Mate's probably one of the only options out there. I don't think that's his best position, but if he is going to certainly, whilst I think Mate is suspended for these first two games at least, because of his red card on the final day of last season. But if he is going to play a 4-2-3-1 and not bring any wingers in, Mate might be an option there long term. Mark McNulty, I'd imagine, must be sold. His 45-minute appearance at the weekend was very, very poor, I have to say. Potentially because he was playing out wide, I'll give him that. It wasn't a good choice from Panovic to play both McNulty and Baldock out wide. I thought they were both very, very poor and clearly more suited down the middle. But I can't think that McNulty has a future at Reading. Sam Baldock is a hard worker, I'll give him that. Again, his best days are surely behind him now, and is probably obviously behind Zhao, Puskas, Mate in that backing order in terms of being winning as number nine. So it's difficult. There's definitely quality in there, and we've seen glimpses from all four of them, Zhao, Puskas, Mate and Baldock. But it's about that consistency now, and we've not seen that. Well, we've not seen that from anyone in Reading's team the last couple of years, but certainly where you want that the most is up front, and we've not seen it enough.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, isn't it? And we still, this is probably the problem with the midfield and the attack now. As much as we want to talk about transfers and reinforcements, Ben, we've got a lot of players to fit in somehow, and not a lot of clubs have a lot of money to take them off us. So in terms of, you know, the midfield at least, Swift, Ijaria and Rinomota, that's a perfectly good three, okay, but where's Laurent going to fit in? Where's Elise going to fit in if he wants to play Luko? Where's he going to fit in? Which of those players are going to play out wide? You'd suggest that maybe only Sonny Luko has any real experience of playing as a winger at this level. It's going to be really difficult for him to keep all these players happy if he doesn't manage to, or if some of them don't leave.
I don't see him playing a Luko, really. I think the Colchester game was more about the formation and the setting up of the team and just kind of picking players to fit that rather than, you know, playing to the player strengths that he had there. I don't see McNulty has a future at the club. I would be very surprised if Baldock stays as well. I think one of my frustrations for last year is the criticism of Puskas. I never really understood that, because actually when the team plays to his strengths and he's able to do that, he's a fantastic player. You know, it was a fair season, you know, double digits, I think he scored last year. You know, there was that weird transition period between Gomez and Bowen in terms of the formation and style, and he was, for me, quite a victim of that. But yeah, I really rate Puskas. The problem for him now, of course, is that Zhao's just scored three goals and you can't drop him for the game on Saturday. So I don't see Puskas playing out wide particularly. You need that front man to kind of get your goals, really, and Zhao is clearly that man. In terms of the midfield, again, very, very strong. But you don't want to be in a situation where you're losing those players either. So he has got a job on his hands if he is going to do the 4-2-3-1. My concern overall, looking at the squad, is the strength and depth and what happens when we get injuries and suspensions and so on. I think obviously with Mate being out at the start of the year, we can cope with that, certainly for the first two games. But you don't know how the team's going to cope with those first two games without him and who's going to stake a claim, really. What I want to see really is a consistent 11 to 15 that is able to pick itself each week and then kind of supplement that with players that are coming through. Whether or not that happens is another thing, but certainly with the players we've got in attack, there's a lot of surplus to requirements players there that he will have to move on very, very quickly.
Well, what you mentioned just a minute ago is kind of where I want to go now, as to what do you want Paunovic to do? If you had one thing, you're Nuno Gomes, his new assistant coach, and you're sat there after the first training session, what would you say to him, Ben? What would you say is the, whether it's a formation, a young player's style of play, what is the one thing that you want him to do right now?
I think the biggest thing is to, I know this is very wishful thinking in football these days, but not leave everything to the last minute. I know that there was looking over at the transfers from all the championship clubs earlier, and the business has been quite slow. There's been an awful lot of goings out, but very few coming in. And I realised that, you know, the market these days dictates kind of last minute, you know, purchases. But from my point of view, we did that last year where we brought in, you know, all those players in the space of a couple of days, and it just backfired massively. I think if we'd had them in earlier under Gomes, then we would have been in a much better position moving forward and would have had a much more stable start to the year. Obviously, you know, I say this time last year, but the start of last season, we had some great results, Cardiff at home in particular, where we just looked absolutely fantastic, but then it just tailed off. And I think that was purely down to the players bringing in and not really understanding the system that Gomes was asking them to play. So I think really is to assess very quickly the players that need to be there in terms of where he wants to take our club. But also kind of thinking about the players to supplement the quality that we've already got, because, you know, on paper, we have got some fantastic players. Swift often comes up as one of the best players in the championship, certainly in midfield. I think Joao on his day is an absolutely fantastic striker. But again, it's just about how we get those players playing together in the right direction and gelling that squad very, very quickly in terms of the expectations and how they're going to move forward in their style of play.
Yeah, that's a point, isn't it, with the moving forward and a sense of developing this team? Because one thing I'm really worried about this season is that we're going to lose five of the first seven games, and in November we'll be saying the season's over, which has basically happened each of the last few seasons. So to avoid that is going to be really difficult, I think, for a new manager. And Ollie, it's the same question for you in terms of what do you want from the team? Because personally, what I want is to see him find a formation, just stick with it. Like Ben says, that core 11 to 15 players think this is how the team is going to play. This is, you know, for the first few weeks at the very least, how things are going to be. Obviously, signings are going to come in all the way up until October. If it gets 12 weeks in and we need to change, then great. But for the now, just find something and stick with it, and then see where it takes us. Because at Chicago Fire, he had a bit of a reputation for changing the tactics every week. And, well, funnily enough, Chicago Fire have had a really awful start to this MLS season. So maybe them hating him is kind of their own fault. But it's something that he's been accused of. And I think, Ollie, that's the thing that I'd like to see. It's just a game plan, basically.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it's perhaps wishful thinking to think that he'll settle on the system straight away, considering the reputation that he had over in the States. Look, I think from what we're hearing is he usually goes to a 4-2-3-1 more than anything. To do that, he's going to have to get some wingers in, because Reading have virtually no width in the side at the moment. I don't trust Johnny Luca to play out there. As I say, I don't think that's Yaki Mete's best position out there. It leaves you with a lot of surplus forwards if you're just going to play one up front. So he's going to have to do some sort of jiggling around or something, because at the moment, the players certainly don't fit that system. What he won't do, which I think fits the current squad, is a box diamond in midfield, because we have a lot of very good midfield players, and that also enables you to play the two up front. I know we've spoken about it before, but that surely is the formation that fits this current group of players down to the ground. You know, you've got whether it's Swift holding or whether it's Josh Laurent holding, Renan Mota just ahead, and then Ajaria or Aliso just behind the two strikers. That, for me, it is a system that fits this side down to the ground. Paunovic definitely won't do that. As I say, if he wants to play the system that he usually plays, he's going to have to bring in some players, but how much freedom he's going to have in that department, we're not too sure. So he's got a very, very difficult job on his hands to get Reading firing straight away, because it is a very quick turnaround, bearing in mind that he took his first training session yesterday because of the quarantine rules.
So he's got a very, very difficult job in his hands, and I don't envy him. It's not anything to do with him, because obviously the club has made this choice very late on in the summer, but it's left him in a very, very tricky position with just 3 games to go before the start of the season. 3 days, sorry, to go before the start of the season.
Yeah, well, that's the other question I wanted to ask. We'll hear from Parano in just a second. He did a long interview with the club. I'm going to take a snippet out of that and play it for us in 1 second. But before we do that, I'll ask you both, it's kind of a double-sided question in terms of what do you think he will actually do? Obviously, because we don't know him that well, it's kind of hard to gauge that right now. But the question, I suppose, really is, what's the worst fear you have of the new manager coming in over the next 5-6 weeks? And Ben, what would you say is that one sort of nagging thing in the back of your mind? You just think, oh God, if he makes this mistake, which could well, you know, be his downfall.
I think, you know, when it was rumoured that Reading were going to make a change in the manager department and they wanted this big name to take them to the Premier League, which I'm still very unsure about as a rationale, you know, that aside, bringing a manager that very few people had heard of was my instant concern, really. On top of that, you know, the realisation that actually he's probably going to bring in a bunch of players that he knows well, that potentially his coaching staff know well, and that's about it. They won't have any understanding of the Championship or the demands or the you know, the expectations in terms of how teams play and how to set up. So my massive concern is that he goes and brings in 5 or 6 new players, puts them in the team. As you say, we lose the first 5 out of 7 games, and then he's jettisoned as a manager. New manager comes in and has to start again, and we're back to that kind of cycle that just keeps going round. I really hope that's not the case. I really hope that we can see out the year with Paolo in charge. But my nagging doubt at the moment is the lack of preparation time that he's got, and the fact that he's going to want to move quickly with these players that potentially have no understanding or experience of the Championship whatsoever.
Ollie, same question. Your worst fear for Paunovic?
I think the same as Ben, really, but also if he starts sort of forcing square pegs into round holes, if he puts players in positions just because they're trying to fit a system that they're not very good at, and I've mentioned it, you know, 2 or 3 times already today, that I don't want Yaki Mate playing out wide, or whether he tries George Puskas out wide at the weekend because Mate is suspended. You know, we've seen before last season where Mark Bowen sort of tried Ovie Ejaria out on the left. It just doesn't work. You know, play players in their correct positions, and that will hopefully get results. And that ultimately, I suppose, is going to encourage signings, because he does need to bring in someone out wide. But I don't want him to see him forcing players into positions that they're not very good at playing at. You know, he's got a reputation for being a tournament coach, so to speak, in the sense that he'll adapt his system pretty much to based on who we're playing, and not have that defined style of play. But he's got to find some sort of system that works, and I think that, you know, whether you like it or not, is going to mean new players coming in.
Yeah, see, my biggest fear is that he becomes is an authoritarian. By that, I don't mean someone who can kind of shake the squad up and get them into a winning mentality, but someone who becomes, I think, some of the worst managers, you know, the worst periods of management we've seen at Reading in the last 6-7 years, are when managers become kind of petulant and get sort of angry about the way the team is playing or a particular thing about the squad. And we've seen it with the Yapstam, he's kind of turned on the fans before. And Paul Clevens kind of, I think he kind of did it as well, kind of start blaming the players in a way. And if things don't go perfectly from day one, we want someone who's going to be a bit calm and measured and deal with it. And that's not necessarily the idea that the American journalists have given about him. So hopefully that turns out to be wrong. But let's hear from the man himself. Let's give him his dues and hear from Veljko Paunović as he speaks to the Reading media for the first time.
I'm very happy with what I see. I see the commitment which we, from the beginning, we wanted to instill, and that's something that is not negotiable. So it's something that we've been seeing, then the work, then the concepts. We don't have time, but that's not an excuse. It's just another motivation to work efficiently and specifically every day before the season starts, and we're just there. We are at the doors of the of the long and hopefully successful season.
Okay, let's quickly round up the preview section before we get onto the mailbag then, guys. Transfers, let's just kind of round up what's happening so far. Not very much. Rodrigo Riquelme is an Atletico Madrid winger, supposedly been training with the squad with a view to a loan move. I spoke to a friend out in Madrid about this, and he said that basically there's a bit of surprise around Atletico fans that he would go to the championship, the idea being that he supposedly is better than that. So that'd be good news. Ian Matson as well, the Chelsea left-back, has been rumoured to potentially been coming in. I've not checked if he's actually gone anywhere else, but one of those ones where loads of championship clubs are after him. We certainly need a left-back, so keep an eye out for something like that. In terms of outgoings, Raphael has admitted that he would like to play in the Premier League. It's not really much of something to admit, but he said that there is supposedly interest in him. So that's something to keep an eye on. If we're not going to sell certain players, I'd imagine that Raphael is one of those players that we value very highly. Still got 2 years left on his contract. John Swift again. Aston Villa and Sheffield United kind of been rumoured for him pretty much all summer. So we'll see where that one goes. But we've got until October the 5th to see out any deals, which is obviously a bit different from how it's been the last few seasons. And Ollie, I suppose the question is, from here on, what does a good window look like? Does a good window actually involve some big name player sales, or does it maybe involve nothing at all?
I think it depends on how we are doing financially. You know, there's still no official news on whether the financial fair play regulations are going to be relaxed because of the pandemic. If they are, there's a bit more wiggle room for the club not to sell the players. But you know, as it stands, you know, they definitely need to sell sell some players and get some money. And whether that's John Swift, whether that's Raphael, whether that's Liam Moore, I don't know. But as it stands, we've learned for ages that the club's position financially is quite perilous. And I wrote a couple of months ago that we are going to need to see player sales this summer again. If there's regulations frozen, then we perhaps don't need to do that. But in terms of comings in, just fill those gaps. I think Riquelme and Matson would almost be perfect, really, because they fill sort of the two nagging holes, really, in that side in terms of being a left-back and in terms of being a winger. So players, you know, in that mould would do me fine. But I think it all depends really on sort of how much money Reading can spend or how much money they need to bring in, because again, it's still very, very unknown sort of what the impact this pandemic will have on the whole of football, really.
Yeah, and Ben, I must say that I'm not a fan, generally speaking, of transfer deadlines being into the season, but this season obviously it's totally acceptable, and I think it's actually going to suit Reading, because it's going to mean, I think, particularly with Premier League clubs who probably have a bit more money than they're letting on, well, they should do anyway because they got enough money from the TV, but they're quite a high chance, I think, that come last week of September, first week of October, it's going to be quite a few panic buys going on, and players like Swift and, you know, you can maybe include Liam Moore in this, they're prime panic buy material. If you are Aston Villa and you think, oh God, our midfield's died awfully, here's that guy we've been told we need to pay £10 million for. Just do it. Just get it done and buy him, and then we'll have £10 million. That's the sort of situation I'm dreaming of for Reading doing well out of it. In terms of incomings, yeah, I agree that it's just filling those holes. But Ben, for you, what does a good window look like?
I think, you know, the board have been quite clever about Swift, because at the start, I was, you know, when they were kind of talking about 4 or 5 million, my instant response based on the, you know, the dire financial situation that we are in as a club was just sell him, you know, just get rid of him. As sad as it is, we need the money more than the player. But I think you're right. I think that by playing hardball over those extra millions, they might find that actually come towards the, you know, the end of the transfer window, that we do get, you know, more money for him. I feel like really with the players that we've rumoured, Matson would be the one that's probably the priority. I still harbour this kind of dream that we get Baker back as well. Maybe they'll do a 2-for-1 deal, Chelsea, I'm not sure. But, you know, the idea as well that the players that we are being linked with are kind of going to fit the system for once is quite encouraging. I think Raphael, from an outgoing point of view, it's not an odd admission. I think it's a strange place to do it, and I think he's just put himself in the shop window at this point, which is quite cheeky, really, but, you know, that's his prerogative. I again, as much as I like him, if we could get upwards of 5 million for him, that would be good business, because there are plenty of other goalkeepers that we could get on loan, certainly for the season, that would do a similar job to what he's done. But, you know, for me, the priority is to get some money through the door and just try and balance those books a bit more. If they can do that, that will be a good window for me. As Ollie said, there's very little width in the side, if any. So if he is going to go down the 4-2-3-1 route, he's going to have to get some good backup for Jao. And also some out and out wingers, really, that are potentially more versatile than the ones that we've got.
Right, well, let's do it then. Let's get the preview part of the podcast done before we move on to the mailbag with the official season predictions. I just want a straight up position that you think Reading are going to finish in 2020-2021. And I'm going to have to say 19th is where I'm going to put Reading. There's a large part of me can see Paunovic not lasting the season. I don't think that we've done necessarily very much to change the problems around the club that we've seen for a number of years, and the timing of the whole decision has been just really curious. And I don't, yeah, as much as I like think the transfer window is going to suit us, I'm not sure it will. So, Ollie, then do you want to shoot first with your season prediction?
I'm also of the mind that I don't think Paunovic is going to last the whole campaign, but on that basis, and the fact that someone better, well, I say better, hopefully better, might come in to replace him and give us a bit of a boost. I think we might have a fairly similar season to last season. So on that basis, I'm going to go 15th, I think.
Ben, what are you saying?
17th, I think, is where we'll end up. Last year, I said 14th, and amazingly, I was right. So, I think it would be the best case scenario if we finished top 10, but I just can't see that happening. So 17th is where I will say we'll end up this year.
You know what? I don't think this podcast has predicted a top 10 finish in a decade. It feels like you know, these season preview podcasts, I'm really sorry for listeners who feel like we're repeating ourselves every season, but then the club is repeating itself every season. So we're kind of like Gardener's World at the moment. You just need to listen to one year and you've got the next five sorted out. With that in mind, let's hear what you guys think, the listeners think, to go into the mailbag and see if we can find any optimism in that.
For all the latest Reading news, analysis and opinion, visit the website at thetilehurstend.com.
Right then, it's been a few weeks, so Reading fans, judging by the mailbag, have got not that much more optimistic than they were at the end of last season. There's a bit of a quick-fire one, starting off with Loyal Royals, sending a few questions. So guys, if Ollie want to go first on these questions, then as soon as Ollie's done, Ben, you jump in with your answer. So what league position should we be aiming for? I'm going to say first, which it's probably, if you guys want to jump in with something perhaps a bit more realistic.
I mean, I said on the last pod of last season that the aim should always be to be better than the previous season and to show improvement and to show progress. So I suppose on that basis, it should be 13th. But yeah, obviously, every side in the championship wants to win the league. But yeah, I think you have to aim for progress from the previous season.
Yeah, I mean, we should be aiming for sixth, really, the playoffs. But again, in terms of realism, I'm going to stick with my 17th prediction, I think, really.
It says teams you tip this season, so for going up to begin with, the team I'm going to tip for going up this season is Stoke, because they're a team packed full of quality. They've got their manager kind of feet under the table now, and occasionally they just whop a team last year and then be awful for 3 weeks. So I think as my cheeky bet for going up, I'm not a betting man, hashtag gambler aware, but if I was, I think Stoke might be a good one for that.
Do you want three from me or just one?
Just one for going up.
Just one. I think Norwich will win the league again.
I think Swansea would do well. I think they got a good coach. You know, they seem quite good towards the end of last year. You know, good mentality to push into the playoffs. I know obviously we gave them an easy ride last game, but they still got there. They weren't, you know, disastrous in the playoffs either. So I think with a bit more time, I think Swansea will be interesting to to push on in the league?
A team for going down, Louisville asked for. So I'm going to say I'm really torn between Birmingham and Huddersfield as my team to go down. Obviously, yeah, they're probably worst teams out there, but and I've nothing against Birmingham as a football team, but that really is about time they went down, in my opinion. Ollie, what do you think?
I'm going to sound obvious, but I'm going to go with Wickham. As much as I would love them to stay up, and they pretty much probably will be my second team throughout the whole season. I just think they don't have quite enough quality, really, in that side to compete. I agree that Huddersfield don't look in the best of shape, but in terms of a dead cert to go back down, it's going to have to be Wickham, unfortunately.
Luton for me, can't see them staying up at all. The obvious ones there are Sheffield Wednesday, but I think Luton will find it really difficult to stand in division this year, definitely.
Yeah, I can definitely see those two as well. Matt, you're most looking forward to, this is going to be a really, really boring answer, but the first one that I can get back into. As I say, I went to the Spurs friendly and covered that for work, and it was a really odd scenario, because especially 99.9% of the time, we're not going to play Spurs away in pre-season, I know that, but if Reading's first trip to Spurs was with fans, you know there'd be, let's say it's a League Cup game, and there'd be 8,000 Reading fans there. It'd be an amazing occasion. Even though we lost 4-1, it would have been still a fantastic memory as a Reading fan for the club's first trip to that. It's an amazing stadium as well. So I'm going to have to say the first game we're going to get back into, and there's a prediction for that, I suppose, next season.
Yeah, that you've almost taken my answer. I was going to say the game we can get back into. In terms of when that will be, God knows. I think the news came out today that it's not going to be the start of October. That's probably going to be pushed back. The optimist in me says maybe November, December. The pessimist says probably not at all this season. Realistically, I would hope for maybe February or March, perhaps. Other than that, if we are going to be forced to watch from home, obviously the games against Wickham will be good just because it's a fairly localish derby. But other than that, yeah, as soon as we can get back into watching games as fans, then that'd be fantastic.
I think for me, trying to get to the Brentford Stadium, which looks absolutely fantastic, by the way, from the road. I think that's wishful thinking because that's December time, I believe. I haven't got the fixtures in front of me, but that'll be wonderful if we could get to their new ground. I think, you know, the Wickham game obviously goes without saying, and Bournemouth as well. They're always quite good games against Bournemouth, you know, historically. So, you know, there's some good games coming up, and I think one of the positives about the Championship this year is that there's a lot of southern teams in it. So, you know, obviously it's a bit irrelevant at the moment, but less travelling for us fans, really.
Yeah, that's actually his last question as well from Louisville, is when do you reckon fans will get back to matches, if at all? I think, speaking as an optimist at this moment, Reading Stadium is probably quite well fitted to having fans spread out, because for a number of reasons. Firstly, it's out of town, so it's not going to...
We usually do anyway as well. I think there's hardly ever a time where I see seats that are close together, so we're pretty well stocked in terms of fitting.
Exactly, that's the thing. You go, if it was Griffin Park still at Brentford, then there's about three seats for every one seat there is at Reading, aren't there? So that's a huge point. And also, it's out of town, so there's not going to be a massive congregation of people anyway, and loads of parking. So I think we're probably not, I don't know if you guys disagree, but we're probably not in a bad position to be picked as like a trial game.
Yeah, I think the club actually tweeted the other day actually that they were in talks with the EFL, that obviously Cambridge, I think, had that game the other day. But yeah, I'd agree. I think we're in a pretty good position to potentially hope to trial. But again, who knows when that will be, based on the news coming out today and with the cases rising. Who knows? As I said, I think worst case scenario, we don't see a game at all with fans this season. I would hope maybe sometime in the new year, maybe.
Yeah, but just quick divergence from this point before you go on, Ben. I was just going to say there's been a lot of talk of whenever something comes up about this, fans always say, oh, I've seen fans on Twitter ask about season tickets, which I think is beautifully optimistic to think they can be allowed to buy a season ticket this season. But where do you think, Ben, is going to be the fairest way of dealing with only having 3,000 fans in? Because let's face it, the applications if we just have a straight up ballot are going to be through the roof for that sort of thing.
I think it's very difficult. I think it's quite admirable of the club to not start selling season tickets. You know, a lot of clubs are trying to secure that revenue stream, which is perfectly understandable, you know, given the situation. I think, you know, I read about Arsenal doing a ballot system, and I was talking to a friend of mine who's a QPR fan, and he was saying that they've gone they've done a ballot system as well, and fans have just gone ballistic on Twitter and social media. I don't see any other way to do it. If you did it on royalty points, you know, you're pricing out maybe younger fans that have been going regularly over the last sort of 5-6 years, but haven't, you know, had the royalty points since day one. So I think the ballot system is the best way to do it. I am surprised that the club haven't put together a package for iFollow, which I know we're going to talk about later on. But I think, you know, we're in a position as fans where we could be paying sort of £10 every game up until Christmas, January time. And then football comes back, say, for example, and then we're buying a season ticket on top of that. So I think it's interesting the club haven't put together a package for iFollow, definitely.
Yeah, as you say, we'll mention that as we get to the Derby game preview. Let's move on in the mailbag then. Not the Top 20 pod have asked us, do you pronounce it like Pauno or Porno? I'm not going to call him Porno, basically, because I don't want to trigger some sort of Google word filter that's going to mean you can't find this podcast on any normal search. But supposedly, Jack Winstanley is part of the BBC Berkshire team. He tweeted saying that he's been in contact with the BBC pronunciation unit, which is probably the most BBC thing I've ever heard of, and they said that it's Veljko Paunovic. So hopefully that clears it up. Also, Not the Top 20 pod predicted us 18th. I was listening to them earlier today, which I would, maybe fans would get angry about that, but given our predictions, it's pretty much bang on for where we think we are. Matt Williams saying, do you think there will be a game attended by Reading fans where Paunovic is still the manager? Well, I suppose we've spoken about that already, the kind of pessimism around that if we're going in the new year. John Smith saying, do you think we'll get promoted as champions, runners-up, or from the playoffs from League One in 2022? And Ollie, the relegation question, maybe it will come back in, because we didn't have it too much last year, but certainly years before, we have toyed with relegation being a good thing as fans, mainly to go and visit new grounds. Is it going to be the case that relegation isn't actually so bad for next season?
It would be an absolute disaster. I think based on our financial position, it would absolutely cripple the club, potentially even ruin the club. If we went down, we simply cannot afford, you know, quite literally can't afford to go down. I don't think it'll be that much of an issue. I always look to see whether there are essentially three worse teams than us. And I do, especially with Sheffield Wednesday's points deduction, think that we should have enough. But you know, it would not be in any possible way a good thing if we were to go down.
Yeah, Matthew Williamson asking, is Luke Southwood good enough to be Reading's number one? Ben, I think the problem with Luke Southwood is that we don't really know much about him, really. But if Raphael is to go, as we were saying earlier, would you be confident in giving him half a season, say, up until January, to just say, you know, you've had some experience elsewhere. We've got Sam Walker if we need him. We've got Konya Boyce-Clark if we really, really need him for now. Would you, in that scenario, be comfortable letting him have a run?
No. Simple answer. I think, you know, last year we started with Virginia, didn't we? And he was just a disaster, really. I think the problem, if the team is lacking confidence and the defence all over the place, the last thing you want is a relatively inexperienced goalkeeper behind you. I think, you know, the club, all the results tended to stabilise a little bit when Raphael came in. And I think obviously over Christmas he was a massive part of that. You think back to the Fulham game where he had an absolute blinder. So I as much as I've kind of read and seen about Luke Southwood being, you know, a very good prospect, I just don't see him being our kind of go-to goalkeeper at the moment.
No, I must say, it's probably not the worst scenario. If it's just from October the 5th until January, that's 2.5 months to get through with Southwood. I wouldn't be as fearful as I was with Virginia, but as you say, it's not a scenario you really want to be getting into. Goalkeeper is a position you want to be certain in it, as you say, much for the confidence of the defence in front of them as much as for the shot-stopping ability and distribution they have. Final question then for this week's mailbag, Jack Killick saying, do you think a backup target man is needed if we are moving to a passing style under the new boss, as we're already quite well stocked with three capable strikers, especially as it looks like we'll be playing 4-2-3-1? I mean, Ollie, I don't know if we are moving to a passing style under the new boss. I don't think we've got a huge amount of indication as to what he's going to do, if anything, style-wise. But buying a new target man, like a specifically target man sort of striker, is that something that you think we need?
I think we definitely, obviously, it was very clear last season that we struggled without Lucas Shaw, and certainly our results without him dipped, and we saw at the weekend how big an impact he can have on the side. But, you know, to bring in a new striker, regardless of whether he's in that mould or not, would take, you know, that striker count up to, you know, what, 5 or 6. And that's, you know, simply too many to be having in the squad unless George Puskas gets sold or Yaki Mate gets sold. I think you'd have to look at getting someone out before you could bring someone in if you were going to bring in the striker.
Yeah, Ben, you mentioned earlier you're being a fan of George Puskas, and it looks like he's going to be the kind of off-the-bench option this season, or the Lucas Shaw replacement option for when he gets injured. But is he? Do you feel like he'll be capable of doing the lone striker role if called upon to do that this season? Is that something that I think that he struggled massively in it last season? Is there anything going to change about him this year?
I think the thing with Shaw is that if he is going to be the number one up top, he is going to he's going to get an awful battering from a lot of those championship defenders. I think there is clearly a fragility about his, you know, his physical condition. Obviously, he's worked hard over the summer to get back. But, you know, you look back at previous squads we've had strength and depth as strikers, you know, you go of Buck, Hewton and Forster, and each one of those were kind of interchangeable, really. And I think we need to get to the stage where we have exactly the same thing. As I said, you know, I rate Puskas, but we've got three strikers on the books that have failed to convince a whole host of the managers in Baldock, Smith and McNulty. So really it begs the question, you know, why they're still here. I do think they need to go, and we need to bring in at least one or possibly two strikers to to supplement Jao. I think we'll see that Mate will drop back a little bit more. I don't agree with that necessarily, but I think that's going to be the only way to fit him into this new system. So it's going to be interesting in the striker department over the next couple of weeks, definitely.
Yeah, I must say my only real pessimism on things changing is I can't see any of those players being bought by anyone. Might be able to loan them out, but I'm not sure that things are really going to change. I think it's going to be very much like it was last season with Zhao, the number one. The number twos and threes occasionally impressing. Baldock never really does much off the bench. Seems to be more of a starting striker and a two. Puskas probably suits the two as well. Ollie said earlier that the diamond formation is the one that suits this squad. I completely agree with that. And playing two men up front makes all of those strikers better. But is it going to happen? Let's talk about is it going to happen, actually, and move on to big match preview.
You're listening to the Tilehurst End Podcast. By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
Okay, get ready for a new season of football. 2020-2021 kicks off on Saturday the 12th of September at 3 o'clock in Derby. Reading against Derby. It's £10 on iFollow, I believe, unless they've given us a discount, which I must have missed. I think the only time I've had a cheaper game on iFollow, I missed the only goal and the thing didn't work for half an hour. So hopefully there's no repeats of that for this start of the broadcast. And, well, Derby are a really interesting team to be facing first off. They were a complete home-heavy team last year under Philip Cocu. This summer, they've lost Chris Martin, Mason Bennett, Tom Huddleston, Max Lowe, Jaden Bogle. They've barely signed anyone, really. Mike Tewerik is the only one from Groningen they've signed. He's the only one with a Wikipedia page that I looked on their season earlier. So after they squeezed past Barrow in the cup, Ollie, we've got a team here who, I don't know, are they good?
Yeah, it's hard to tell. They have got Matt Clark back in on loan from Brighton, who was their player of the year last year, and that's a huge boost for them at centre back. But clearly losing first choice fullbacks in Bogle and Lowe is clearly a blow. Chris Martin obviously didn't do much at Reading, but to an extent did all right at Derby. They do have a lot of obviously very exciting young players, probably sort of the best sort of collection of young players in the league, really. The likes of Louis Sibley, Max Bird, Jason Knight. They're much like Reading in the fact that they're a very hard team to predict. There was a point last season, certainly towards the start of lockdown, where they looked as though they might make a little late run to the playoffs before they lost four in a row against sides in the top six. So it's hard to predict. Obviously, they've got the Wayne Rooney factor as well. It's going to be a difficult game. It's hard to sort of read too much into that Barrow game at the weekend. I think there were a lot of almost freak results in the Cup. I think Luton beat Norwich. Cardiff lost 3-0 to Northampton as well. So how much you can read into last weekend, I'm not too sure. But they'll probably, I think, finish around where we will this season. So it might well be a very, very even game at the weekend.
Ben, as Ollie says, that Rooney factor, he has a fantastic record of scoring against Reading, although albeit most of those games are for Manchester United. And this one, is it going to basically be the final pre-season game of the summer? Because we had the Colchester game, which was in itself a lot of a pre-season game, but a lot of first-team players who we expect to be playing, Ajari, Swift, Yeardom, who hopefully are going to be playing at Derby, didn't play in that game. And Derby, likewise, have not double-checked. I'm sure they've changed some of their players for the Barrow game. And therefore, is this game, as a spectacle, actually going to be pretty slow, do you think?
I think the absence of fans, obviously, it's been said time and again, is going to be a massive factor in the game. I feel like both sides are going to have to go out for the win. Sounds obvious, I know, but there is no way that Paulo is going to just want to see what happens in that game. He's going to pick the strongest team that he's got available to him based on the week and a half that he's had with the squad. I think from Derby's point of view, they have lost a lot of experience, similar to us. You know, Chris Martin, Tom Hoddleston, those sort of players, losing those, they've kind of got that bit of, you know, championship grit about them. I don't think you can read too much into the cup loss, as Ollie sort of said, really. You know, there were some shocking results at the weekend and looks like we were lucky to get through against Colchester. But, you know, it is going to be difficult because I think Derby are going to be sort of there or thereabouts this year. I think Cocu's done quite a good job. You know, obviously, previous year under Lampard, Derby were very good. They've had a bit of controversy last year and had a bit of a blip, but they seem to kind of have put that behind them. So it is going to be interesting to see, first of all, you know, Derby's lineup, but also ours. I think it's going to be fairly even, but I think, you know, with the Wayne Rooney factor, that's going to be massively telling because we don't really have, I say, star quality. But when you've got someone like that in your team, there's always a way to win. So I can see sort of Derby coming out on top on that one, really, at the moment.
Yeah, well, I want to talk about the general fixtures that we have to come up in just a second. But as we're on the Derby game, let's talk result predictions. The Prediction League will be back up and running this year with the familiar cast of Motley Crue that Tarlest End has on its regular lineup. And as I won last year's, I'm going to start off this year's by saying that this game is going to be a 1-1 draw. Basically, because as I said, I don't think there's going to be a huge amount of action in this game. I think the teams are going to be quite slow out the blocks, and anyone who risks too much will know full well that they'll be risking it in not a very good time with players not being fit and not being sharp yet. Ollie, where do you think on this one?
I'm not on purpose copying you just because you won last season. But I did have 1-1 down beforehand. I think, as Ben says, I think Derby are probably the better side than Reading. How much the fact that it's Panovic's first game is going to play into it, I don't know. We saw with Bowen a bit of a new manager bounce. Obviously, they've not had very long to train under him. So how much of his system we'll get to see, I don't know. But in terms of players wanting to impress the new boss, there's potential for Reading to do quite well out of that. But yeah, I think it's going to be a very even game, so I'm also going 1-1.
Ben, where are you on for this one?
I'm going to go 2-1 Derby in this one. I think we will score, and I think we look good attacking, but I think Derby are just going to have too much for us in this game.
Yeah, well, let's talk about the fixtures in just a second, but the iFollow topic is obviously, it's the only way we can watch games at the moment. So it's the very nature of it, I suppose, £460 to watch every game of the Reading season, including 3 o'clocks and effectively every game, no matter what, in theory is a steal. Well, obviously, you're not at the game, so it's not the same. And add that on top to, you know, Sky Sports, BT Sports subscription, whatever. If you've got a Sky Sports subscription, I guess you don't have to pay for, like, the 3 games that we're going to be on TV this year, whenever we're playing QPR and probably Norwich away. So those are the costs that we're talking here. And I wonder if you guys think that this is too much, or if it's too little, or if we as fans who don't support a Premier League team where they've got all of their games in September are going to be on these services that most people or a lot of football fans have anyway. I mean, Ben, do you think that it is a fair system? It should, as you alluded to earlier, Reading effectively say, we'll let you buy all of them, or all, let's say half of them. So that's what, the first 23 games you can buy for £200 and have £30 off. Is that the sort of thing we should be doing?
Yeah, I mean, I think you know, the positive is that Leeds have gone up, so they won't be Sky Sports Championship coverage every single game, which is quite good. I think in terms of where we're at with our iFollow, I am surprised the club haven't done a bundle in terms of, you know, you almost buy one, get one free or something along those lines. Me personally, I don't have an issue paying £10 for every game because, you know, at least then we get to kind of feel part of it and watch it. Is it reasonable in the current climate? Yeah, I think it is. I would like to think that they've tidied up their coverage a little bit from the end of last season.
That's a lovely idea.
Yeah, which was absolutely dreadful. I did read that there's 4 cameras in iFollow this year, but whether or not that's the case, I don't know. I think £10 is reasonable. And I think, as you put it, like, if it's going to be all season, £460 for every game is a real bargain. I suppose the positive is that you don't have to pay it all up front as well, which is quite good. But yeah, I think I would be happier watching iFollow knowing when I could get back in the stadium at a certain point. But again, that's quite wishful thinking, really.
Yeah, and Ollie, like me, you don't live in Reading, and going to every game is a bit of a luxury idea for, you know, commitments otherwise. So as someone who maybe picks and chooses their games a bit more, I would personally say that it's quite a lot of money for sitting down on a Saturday and thinking, what am I going to do? You know, I'll pay £10 to watch Reading play Charlton away. It is it's an alien concept more than it is one of the lacks value, I suppose. But is there a lot of school of thought that says actually Reading have opened themselves up to the mass market of, well, not massive, but reasonably sized market of fans who don't live in Reading, who can't get season tickets for one reason or another, and therefore this is not actually a bad deal?
I think that's the key thing. I think when fans were allowed in stadiums and you couldn't go to the game and you lived in the UK, there was no other way of watching the game. But the fact is now that because we can't go to the games are available to watch, but you have to pay for them. But that option wasn't available when you couldn't go to the game beforehand, if you get what I mean. So it's really, really hard, because in an ideal world, you know, all of the games would be on the Sky Red button, free to watch if you bought a Sky subscription or whatever. But ultimately, the clubs need revenue because they're not getting any match day revenue from fans coming through the gates and buying programmes and buying food and whatever. You know, they need to get income somehow. So it's a really, really hard balance to find, because, as I say, when you put yourselves out there and when the games are available to watch, you know, fans are obviously going to want to watch it. But when you put that cost in, it's a case of, you know, how much are you prepared to pay? Because, as you say, in the grand scheme of things, if you're going to go to every game, you know, you'd be paying far more than £460, because if you're buying a home season ticket and then the price of away tickets in the league, obviously Leeds have gone up, but still at clubs like Sheffield Wednesday, the price is extortionate for an away ticket. So it is cheaper than if you were going to go to every game. You don't get that match day atmosphere, but it's a really hard balance to find, I think.
Yeah, I think it's just one of those things that Reading fans are just going to have to accept, that the world is not perfect at the moment by any means. And that I think complaining to the club, I do feel bad for the guys who are having to make these decisions because, yeah, we need money. £10 and it's, if you've lost your job or whatever, maybe it is too much to pay. But sadly, watching a football team is a luxury in a lot of ways. And that, therefore, you know, just means that it's a really difficult decision. And I personally, as someone who has not been able to have a season ticket for a few years because of work and moving out of Reading, I would say that learning to live with not watching every single Reading game is probably worthwhile for a lot of people, and it's probably a good chance to do that. As much as that might sound hypocritical for someone who produces a weekly podcast on it, sometimes it's okay to miss a game. I think that's something that you have to come to terms with as a football fan. Let's round off this season preview then. Fixtures, I wanted to talk about the first five games because we all know that we're going to be sat here in about 4 weeks' time thinking, good God, what have we done? Or, oh my God, what have we done? So Derby away, Barnsley at home, Cardiff away, Watford at home, and Middlesbrough away are our first five league games. What I want to know from you guys to round off the show, where is our first win going to come from? Where is our first defeat going to come from? Ben, do you want to start us off?
Okay, so I think, you know, looking at those games, the positive is that there's three away games, considering our dire home form in the last couple of years. You would expect us to beat Barnsley at home. That probably is the easiest game of the lot. You're looking at probably three or four teams there that would expect to be top half, if not pushing for playoffs. The one that I'm most intrigued by is Borough away, really, because obviously it depends how they start. I think Neil Warnock will set them up, you know, quite aggressively. But that is a real tough start, I think, you know, considering we've got a new manager in, potentially new players bedding in as well. That is not an easy start to life for this season. So you would expect to win at Barnsley, potentially a couple of draws against the other ones. It's not an easy start.
You see, Ollie, the one I'm really interested in is Watford at home, because Derby and Cardiff away, I think you're talking, let's say, like a couple draws, drawn and defeat. I don't think you learn loads about the team in that. Barnsley at home, pray to God that's our first win, because if it isn't, then we're in trouble. But Watford at home, I think, is the really interesting one, because that's a team that's going to have a lot of quality in it. They'll have had a few games to find their feet in the Championship. They might have won them all. They might have lost them all. You know, there's a lot of dynamics going to be going on there. And it's going to be the first time that we're at home to a properly decent team. And I think that's going to be a really key litmus test to see where this Reading team is.
I think it'll be a really hard game for us. And I think we'll probably get beaten by them, if I'm totally honest. I think I remember when Newcastle came down a couple of years ago, and they had a really sort of hard couple of first games, and they lost to Fulham on the opening day, and possibly lost to Huddersfield as well, and then played us in the third or fourth game, I think it was, and beat us 4-1. So it's definitely something to be said. If Watford don't get off to the best start, you know, they might well find their feet against us in that fourth game. It's not inconceivable to say that we don't get a win from those first five games. Barnsley at home is certainly not a given based off our home form last season and the way that Barnsley ended last season. They seem to be sort of heading in the right direction under Gerhard Struber. Derby, as I say, is going to be a difficult game. Cardiff, like Ben, I think they'll have a good season this year. We did all right against Cardiff, obviously, last season. We won 3-0 at home and drew 1-1 away and beat them in the cup. So it's not a bad team to face, and Borough away, always a hard game, Cardiff against Neil Warnock. So, yeah, it's not inconceivable we don't get a win out of those first five games, which would be a nightmare really for Veljko Paunović. But as I say, hopefully there's some sort of new manager bounce in there, and the players are sort of keen to impress him and see what we can do, whether any new players come in and sort of boost the quality of our size. I don't know. But yeah, on paper, it's not an easy first five fixtures for sure.
See, I think our sixth fixture is at home to Wickham. And as you say, with Barnsley not being in the given, Wickham is my earmarked early season unhappy defeat. So hopefully the Barnsley game isn't that. But I think, yeah, maybe Wickham after that could well be. And we will be back after the Derby game. We've got Luton at home, in the Cup in midweek. So we'll probably have a show before then. The winner of that Luton League Cup game, by the way, plays Man United at home in the third round. So that's one that we might take a bit more seriously than otherwise, because there'll be a TV money coming in with that if we get Man United at home. So we will hopefully be joining you after the weekend then. Derby away, as I say, is where it all kicks off. Saturday the 12th at 3 p.m. if you are wanting to tune in on iFollow. I'd strongly recommend, if you've never done iFollow before, or even if you have, get it sorted early, like on the day. Don't leave it until 10 minutes before, because there's always a lot of ways that it can go wrong. And all that's left for me to do is to thank very much Ollie for popping on.
Thank you very much.
And Ben, thank you very much for joining the show today.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you.
And we'll be back after the Derby game. Welcome to another season of Reading Football. We've got no fans, but I suppose that's not too different to how it usually is. We've changed our manager, so that's certainly not too different to how it usually is. And we've got a bloated squad that we don't have a lot of faith in. So try not to indulge too much in the sense of deja vu. And when we go 1-0 up at Derby in the fifth minute, let's hope that is the start of something blessed and miraculous as Reading, at the end of the day, are a club that think they're fighting for promotion. Let's hope there is something in that, and we will see you soon. Thank you very much for listening, and here's to another season of Championship football. Come on, you ass. You smile.